Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, comic books, games, other fun stuff. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by the rest of my teen titans. Guy English is here.
Kapow!
You're looking good. You're looking good for a man of your youthful vigor.
Yeah, it's the yellow cape and the tight green undies that really do it for me.
It's really worrying because John wore those last week. John Maltz is also here.
I was given to understand that was my outfit.
It was probably washed.
We have to take turns being washed.
We talked about this.
Yeah, you know, we're all the boy wonder at some point in our lives.
That's true. We are here. Why are we here? Because
no good reason, Dan.
Well, we're in a situation where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ended, as of course we discussed, and we've discussed a variety of topics since then, but we still have several weeks before Arrow, which is our other normal recapping show, is back on the air. So we're going a little freeform this week. I mean, I guess it's like a this is like an episode sized superhero sweep situation.
The dear readers did not hear the superhero sweep preform situation that Maltz and I muddled through. And there's reason for that. Incompetence.
But you will.
It'll get there.
That's the name of our network. Yeah. The Incompetence.
The Incompetence.
We spun it off.
That's not true. Jason really has his act together.
We're not on that network anymore.
We're getting moved to another network.
Jason just fired up a whole new network just for us.
Yeah, we've been sandboxed essentially, so we can't infect the rest.
I can't blame him. That speaks to his ability and his great leadership. He's a very, very wise man.
Yeah. I'm gonna kick us off a little bit just to talk about something that happened late today. So topical breaking news. We of course discussed some of the Disney Plus upcoming MCU shows, but there is a tacit announcement. I'm not sure it's official, but it was in Variety, and so therefore, you know, fairly well sourced, that they've cast Kate Bishop for the Hawkeye show, and it's Hailee Steinfeld, who is, of course, a Oscar nominee, among other things, I believe, for her role in True Grit, which is a pretty good movie if you've never seen that.
Yep.
And she's been in a bunch of other stuff, including, I think, some of the Pitch Perfect movies. She was in the most recent Transformers movie, which I actually heard was kind of the best of all of them, which is admittedly a low bar, but
whatever. Yeah. I mean, those aren't my bag, but neither is Fast and the Furious, which I know you're watching with Lex.
Let me tell you.
And they seem kind of fun. Yeah. Yeah, some of them seem kind of fun. I've seen one, and I was like, yeah, that's fine. I considered going to see the most recent one, Hobbs and Shaw, because, who is it? The Rock?
And Jason Statham.
Jason Statham.
Well, versus Idris Elba.
Right, oh, sure. Yeah, right. Yes.
Like, that is a... That's one hot tamale of a fight. Like that's a pretty crazy situation, right? Like, yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure we'll get to that one, but it's that's near here.
The other thing that she's in, she is Emily Dickinson in the Apple.
That's right.
TV Plus show coming out called Dickinson.
And she was also, as people have noted, she has superhero experience because she voiced Gwen Stacy in Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh. Yeah.
So,
okay, she's in the family.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I'm sorry. Anybody involved?
Well, Spider-Man's no longer in the family.
Well, extended family, like the crazy uncles you see at the holidays.
So, have we decided yet? Well, I mean, we don't get to decide, but it sounds like a bit of BS and maneuvering in public to me.
Hopefully.
Well,
I hope it works out. We talked about this last week, but
I heard.
You know, I mostly don't blame, I don't know. Everybody's a disappointment in this, but
I
understand why Sony would say no. It's because it's money. Yep. I mean, they're going to make more money if they make the movies themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrible for the fans, but that's probably going to work out better for them. So it's not a bad business decision, but hopefully Disney relents on their demands.
Right. I don't think it's a bad business decision for one or two movies, right? Like, I think you get to milk that for a little bit, and then if the shine wears off, you're left holding the bag of ugly.
Yeah, right.
And somehow, and I don't know how. And maybe it's Kevin Feige, maybe it's the whole apparatus that has been installed. Marvel has been killing it. Like, I can't think of another movie studio that has had that many consistent successes over that long of a period, regardless of genre, regardless of
anything.
Thing.
Yeah.
Like, even the James Bond movies, like, did not do that.
Right. There's a lot of dogs.
It's also
a
hard
lot of dogs. James Bond movies are so
well. You know what I mean. I'm trying to think of something as comparably.
There are very few that have that number of films.
Right. You can't even compare it to anything that well, because franchise wise, it's like it put out 20 films in 10 years. No other franchise does that.
Right. Yeah. That's banana pants by itself. Even the Fast and the Furious can't keep up.
Sure. Or even like the horror movie sequels that they roll out one after another. Like, even those, it's way more than any of those. Like,
yeah, but here's the thing. Yeah. So the horror movie genre is lower budget often.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, like, you can keep churning those out. What Marvel did was manage to spend a lot of money, somehow come to own Atlanta, and just chunk out all of these movies over 10 years, and it's amazing.
And as we said, they're pretty much all at least a certain level of quality there, right? Like, I think there are some disagreements of what's at the bottom of the barrel, but I think even the worst quote-unquote Marvel movie is still better than a lot of the other things out there, which is one reason, like, you know, I found myself not seeing as many movies that are non-superhero movies, and some of that's on me and what I go to see, but it's also because it sucks so much of the air out of the room, and because it's good stuff too, right? It's not just like, I realize that some, you know, it's not to everybody's taste, but obviously we're here on a show talking about superhero TV
movies. Right, and anybody that's listening to this, you would suspect
probably like these movies.
Right, yeah. No, I agree with you. Even the Star Wars movies just seem to be punctuation in the Twitter spam that is constant releases of Marvel movies, you know? Like, I will go see Ant-Man and the Wasp.
When you look at the breadth of the Star Wars movies, I mean, you know, you have the three prequels, which stink, and then everything else, which is basically all pretty good, I think. But still,
it's fine.
To factor in those three movies.
Right, right.
Yeah,
but it's also got longevity in terms of, you know, we're talking about a 40-year-old franchise, as opposed to cramming everything into a decade. And clearly, even when Lucasfilm tried to put out, like, hey, let's try to do two movies in a 6-month period, and everyone's like, whoa, tap the brakes there, fellas.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And you're like, wait, the Marvel saturation. Put out 20 movies in 10 years? Yeah. What happened?
It's different directors, different casts, different heroes, different everything, right? So it kind of makes sense that you could do that.
Well, and
it's like comic books. They decided, like, let's make movie like comic books. And Star Wars has always been a movie experience. 2 years apart, 20 years before the abomination.
Three years for the prequels. They were 3 years apart.
Oh, were they?
Took
really
longer to make movies in those days.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, here's actually a question that I put to Snell and Syracuse on Robot or Not. I don't know if they're going to pick it up, but are Jedis superheroes?
I feel like I've heard you ask this before. Did you and I debate this somewhere? I feel like
I don't.
We discussed
maybe. I don't know. I definitely posted it on Twitter. That's how I asked them. I have no idea if they're going to pick it up.
But. Well, I think I'm thinking of that time we watched. Didn't you send around the thing where it's like the Darth Vader fighting Batman short?
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we definitely discussed that at some point in the past. But
yeah. Vader wins, right?
I think so.
I think he pushes.
Which we all disagree
I think he pushes
with.
Batman. Yeah, I think right. Which
because nobody
makes
beats
no.
Batman.
I know makes most. Right. I remember arguing that. I'm like, no, Batman's obviously going to win. It's Vader.
There's no
he's
question.
Got,
of course, Batman.
He's got like a
win.
Laser sword, and he can kill people with his mind. And yet somehow we all know
the guy
that
who dresses like
win.
A bat and has no powers. Definitely got this.
He's
got this
definitely going to beat Darth Vader.
Right.
I mean, how do you, depends how you define a superhero, I guess. Like, they have heroic qualities and they have super qualities. Does that make them necessarily superheroes? I think this gets down into the weeds.
No, it does. And that's kind of the point of Robot or Not, which we're...
I say no.
Shtick.
But,
we're gonna,
you know, but I don't have a good reason. I don't have a good reason to say no, but that's my
tend
answer.
To go with no too, because they're not treated as such. Yet in their world, they are clearly people of unique ability.
True, although we don't have, I mean, the baseline special, right? Like our superheroes in the MCU or whatever are set against a baseline of people like us in quote unquote reality, right? Whereas the Jedi are set against a world filled with aliens of a variety of different species and with their own different talents and abilities. So, you know, maybe there's
most
like
of them
turn
out to be kind of incompetent. I mean,
at least the ones we've seen them go up against.
If you look at the, you know, like when there were the most Jedi around, they completely screwed up.
Yeah.
That's like an administrative failing, though.
Not
Yoda
very
is really, really bad at
not
filling
very heroic
out all the forms.
To fail on the paperwork.
Right. Yeah. Yoda's awful at that. But yeah, if you take somebody like Grievous, right? Which is, I know, God, I hate that name. But General Grievous is, a robot with an exposed heart, I guess. I don't know.
He's an alien put into a robot body.
Right. So does that make him like Metallo? Or does that make him like something that's not uncommon?
Well, Metallo wasn't really a person, right? But Metallo was just robot, right?
I thought he was a person. He has a name.
Was he?
He's a person with a kryptonite thing.
John Corbin.
Yeah, he's a person with a kryptonite reactor, basically.
Okay, all right. I was not aware.
Yeah, I think he was.
I thought he was just a robot.
I think he was RoboCopped, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Except badly. Like evil RoboCop.
So the Jedi are not superheroes.
I agree with you guys. I think, you know, purely from what that word has come to mean as it's like, you know, as a single term, I don't think that they fit the definition, even though they behave in ways that are not contiguous, but consistent with how we consider superheroes.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Spidey's going to crack a joke about the death sticks, right?
Oh, man. Nobody needs that. Nobody needs
Okay. But, okay, so since we have nothing to talk about this episode, what makes a superhero? Like, what is that? Ollie's a superhero, but just because
he skinned a guy.
Well, okay, he skinned a guy, but also he really hates tennis balls and loves a salmon ladder.
He's a superhero ...
Well, yeah. Like, what makes a superhero?
There are things you can eliminate, right? Like, you don't need powers. There are plenty of unpowered superheroes. Your Batman, your Green Arrow. There are, I think, I mean, normally I would say it comes down to behavior, but even there's a pretty big gamut between the way Batman acts and the way Superman acts, right? Like, in terms of at least their day-to-day, how am I going to accomplish things? Batman
can we just take this opportunity to again, Ollie skinned a man alive. Yeah. So
was he alive or dead?
I never forget.
Yeah,
I think he was alive. The point was to torture him.
I blocked it out.
But we tried to.
But
sorry to keep bringing that up.
No, that's fine.
That's not a thing you get to walk away from. You write that, it's going to get in your face every time we can.
But, like, certainly you don't need to have an unblemished past. I mean, Batman has done some terrible things to people, too. I don't think, maybe not that level, but, you know, he's certainly done some pretty brutal things and some emotionally abusive
Wolverine's,
things.
Like, Wolverine certainly has.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Wolverine always seemed to me to be on the edge anyways, right? Like, because he doesn't even have necessarily all of the, I think what you get the redemption in the case of people like Batman is that you feel like they're struggling for a greater good, right? Like, that's the kind of the rationale.
Right.
And I don't
Logan
feel
doesn't
like that
necessarily
Logan.
Feel like that. Yeah, he's fighting for his friends often, which is cool because you like his friends, right. But you don't often get the feeling that he's, I don't know.
Oh, I will say I will say that in the movie? Logan, I think you get an idea that he is certainly a person with a code, and that code is, it has a, if not altruistic angle, at least a like good angle in terms of like, you know, what he's trying to do there. But it's not like a I'm here to save the world.
No.
No, no, not at all. I mean, he basically wants to take care of Charles, really. I mean, the cynical aspect in Logan would have been he should have just killed him. I mean, no, honestly, Charles seems to be a real danger to a lot of people.
Right.
As he's, I hope I'm not spoiling the movie for anybody, but his brain is going bananas, and he has the capability to basically kill all kinds of people. And it's alluded to that he killed the X-Men somehow.
Yeah, right.
It's never really explained, but all of the X-Men are dead, and you get the sense that, like, Charles killed them somehow with his... this brain head. And I mean, how do you solve that? It's just kill the guy, but he can't, and he won't. So
yeah,
that's a heroic aspect, I think, in a way.
That's
your one of your sort of stereotypical hero dilemmas, right? Is like the,
right, exactly.
You should value the many over the one.
Right, the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many. The needs of the other way around. Spock taught me nothing, but the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one is kind of the thing that you want to be doing. But Logan doesn't do it, right? Like he inverts it because he thinks he just wants to save everybody.
Well, and again, that's a typical superhero trope, right? Like we see that frequently on Arrow. It's like, well, if you just gave up this person, like you could save the city, right? But you know. You always are sort of inculcated in these people that like that's not what you do, right? You don't trade lives,
right? And Logan, one of the reasons I actually like that character less so now that he or at least through the 90s when he became like an anti-hero, stab him in the face kind of guy. He was a villain. He was a Hulk villain. And a tenacious little Canadian sent out stab the Hulk a lot was like kind of a cool idea. Like, okay, you can't stop this little guy, but he's not going to really do any much damage to the Hulk. it seemed like it was a cool matchup, you know? And then they took him and they put him on the X-Men in Giant Size X-Men, number one, which introduced Nightcrawler and Colossus and Storm, I believe.
Yeah,
mix up the team. Banshee.
Like,
A bunch of those guys. Yeah, like the second wave of X-Men, basically.
Right.
Yeah, and since then he got huge because, I think the anti-hero wave hit comics around that time.
In Canada Fever.
Oh, man. Ask my girlfriend about Canada Fever. They've all got Canada Fever.
I'm sorry, I mean,
that was an actual disease.
The preferred term is maple fever, thank you.
Maple, yeah. Yeah. My chest hair is actually carved into the shape of a maple leaf. I don't know if anybody wants to know that, but that's a fact.
Nobody wants to know that.
Okay.
The only cure is more moose bell? I don't even know.
I don't know. I've never heard of a moose bell, man. I'm sorry. Maple syrup ain't bad, though. So what's a supervillain? No, I know.
Are you new here? Do you need us to define these terms?
No, I don't. But I do need to fill like an hour with the commentary, and I think this is. I think the.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong.
Our readers are going to be like, "Can I recycle this paper that this cap got printed out on?" I don't even know. It came out of a fax machine. Can you recycle fax machine paper? No idea.
Well, I mean, a supervillain is by necessity an inversion of the superhero, right?
Is that the entire way they're defined? Like,
Well, not a good one.
Forgive the politics behind it. Is Dick Cheney a supervillain kind of thing? Like, don't. Well, forget the particulars, yes, but like, right. Yes, I know the answer is yes, but forget the particulars of the politics and let's think about the mechanics of the situation.
Well, if
he's also a cyborg.
Yeah. Yes, he is. And he just won't die. I should have picked something way more abstract. I'm sorry. Actually, picked an honest to God Lex Luthor.
Way too easy an example.
I was going to say Lex Luthor is a supervillain, despite, again, not having any superpowers, at least in most traditional incarnations. So you could, again, I think there's an inversion of the tropes, although what's interesting about it in some ways is that it also, the similarities, right? Like, that's the old trope of the we're two sides of the same coin. So there are similarities because of the same, just like superheroes won't sacrifice one person to save a bunch of people, the supervillains prioritize themselves over a bunch, right? They're still looking out for one person. It's just that person is them.
I don't know if there's... So here's the thing. I don't know if there's... centering themselves or centering the cause. Magneto certainly doesn't center himself.
Oh, those are very different. I mean, yeah, I agree. Yeah, right. But like Lex Luthor doesn't have a cause unless you consider that cause killing Superman.
Well, I think they've retconned it, but I think his cause is to prove that humankind does not need some kind of superpowered alien running around.
Yes, that is a more recent...
It's weak. I think, it's weaker. Nobody. If you watch the movies... Like Superman 2 being Superman 1, like the from 1977 being the canonical Superman that I think most people know. Yeah, no, he just wants to make some beachside property. That's all.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
That movie is so great.
We could watch that and discuss that on a future episode.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah. Put that on the list.
I think I've only seen it like once, maybe.
Oh, God.
Oh my God.
I watched it again a couple of years ago and the special effects are so bad, but it's still like the flying effect mostly. It's just like when he's up in the air, you're like, oh boy, man, things have really changed. But the practical stuff, you know, it's all on the ground is good.
It's such a remarkable movie. You really need to, we're going to watch that. I'm going to make you do your homework and watch that.
I've seen the first two. That's the only two I've seen of there are four of them.
That's all you need to
see.
Yeah,
there are four. Okay. Yeah.
They go downhill after the two.
Yeah, which is basically why the Superman Returns supposedly picks up
after two. And I have seen Superman Returns. I think that's why I ended up watching Superman 2 was like, oh, I need to see this before Superman Returns.
Returns is fine. It's pretty good.
I have some fun.
I like Brandon Routh a lot. Obviously, we've talked about him. So.
Right. That opening scene is pretty fantastic, I will say.
When he saves the plane?
Yeah. That 15 minutes or something is like the best Superman movie that's been made in the last 2 decades easily.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's flat out the best.
After I got that on video, I watched that over and over.
It's amazing. I bought it too, even though I don't necessarily like the movie, but I'm like, I just want to watch that.
I like the movie. I mean, I don't think it's like, it's not the best thing, but I think it's still solid.
Yeah, I'd have a hard time singing its praises, I guess is what I'd say. Like,
I mean, I don't go around advocating for it really.
Right. No. Yeah. If you don't like it, fine. I get it. Right. I like it. But whatever, I know why you wouldn't, and that's cool. So, not a big deal. Where I was going previous to this was the M. Night Shyamalan movie, not Glass, the predecessor for that. Unbreakable.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing superhero movie and probably one of my favorite. Yeah. And the supervillain, I hope I'm not spoiling this for anybody, if I am, just go watch Unbreakable. It's a great movie. Also, I don't know. Don't listen to random ass superhero podcasts.
We have discussed Unbreakable on The Incomparable.
Oh, we have. Yes.
There is an episode about that. And so you should go listen to that and I'll dig up the episode number for it.
Okay. Yeah. And by we, I mean somebody else because I don't think I was on that one. But
I definitely was because that's one of my favorite movies of the last 20-ish years. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Me too. So why don't you sing the praises?
Spoil it.
Spoiler horn. I guess that would be. I will say if you are interested, it's episode 342 of The Incomparable, entitled "Sad Superman," which features Jason Snell, Moises Chiyon, Erica Ensign, myself, and Justin Michael discussing Unbreakable. And I will say I have not seen either of the follow-up movies, although I heard
I saw Glass.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I heard Split was pretty good, actually, but Glass was not great. That's kind of what I heard.
It's, I don't know. I didn't see Split. I heard it was good. I did see Glass. I liked it. I was okay with
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. I'll have to check
Unbreakable
it out.
Yeah,
that's what I heard too. Like it was, yeah. It was good, but not.
But
it was,
that's the thing is, Unbreakable is a phenomenal movie, especially for me. And I said this during that episode, but like I went into that having only seen the trailer. And, you know, this was 1999, 2000, somewhere in there. And it's like, there was not the same level of furor over anticipating a movie as there is now, right? Like, you didn't have people ferreting out every little detail. It has one of the best movie trailers ever made, and I will stand by that, in that it is just enough to get you going, what the hell is going on, without giving away anything about the movie. And it's incredibly impressive in that way. And I did not even know that it's comic book related until you get that sort of opening. There's like an opening text thing where it talks about how many comic books are sold and stuff. And then it turns out to be rather integral to the whole plot. So
I didn't even get that it was a comic book movie even after that. Cause I'm dumb. I don't know. I mean, I thought it would be related, but like, I didn't know that it was literally going to be a superhero story. I went in having watched, Sixth Sense. And this was a little bit before you would go to like an M. Night Shyamalan movie and anticipate that you were going to be tricked, basically, which is, I think it's become both a blessing and a curse to him.
It's definitely a curse, right? Because
he's a good filmmaker. He really is.
He is a good filmmaker.
He's remarkably good, but I feel like he needs to. I feel like he thinks he needs to do this twist thing, which I...
Well, he's backed off that, but I think to a certain degree.
Yeah.
So he has the problem of he is extraordinarily talented, and he made some great movies, but he also possibly bought a little too much into his own hype.
Right.
And he also kept trying to pull subsequent ones over on people, and, you know, there's diminishing returns there. And, I mean, to my mind, I will say this because it's still one of my favorite anecdotes. I remember being in a movie theater when there was some movie that, not a movie he made, but a movie he produced, so his name was on it, and people booed when his name came up in the movie theater I was in. And I was like, when do you see that? It almost never happens, especially for someone who is behind the camera. Yeah. Like, that is unheard of. And to me, that was just like the mind-blowing part, is like he had reached so far into the cultural awareness that people were just upset about it.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword there.
Sure, yeah.
Dear readers...
They also marketed... I mean, they used him as a marketing tool after he had successful movies, which is part of the problem.
Yep, yeah, there's a lot of problems there, and it's a shame because I do think he's a really good filmmaker, and I think some of the ones even that he gets knocked for are actually pretty good movies. And I'll plug again over on our friend Anthony Johnson's now-defunct podcast, Unjustly Maligned. He and I did an episode where I defended Lady in the Water, which is
that's a good one.
It's flawed, but it has some really great things in it.
Yeah. It's, again, beautiful. Just shot beautifully.
Oh, yeah. He is a really, really good filmmaker.
Technically, for sure, you could debate whether or not the Jack in the Box needs to be triggered every movie.
Well, that's it. I mean, like, I knew some morning shock jock had spoiled Sixth Sense for me before I saw the movie. Like the day after it came out. This guy gives it away. I'm like driving to work, and I find out what the thing is.
Is that what happened?
You deserve it, right? You deserve it for listening to the morning zoo.
I guess so. That's on me.
My point is that I still we went to the movie like 2 days later, and I still loved it.
It was
a good movie, and we had a good time. And I didn't tell my wife what the reveal was, but I sat through the whole thing and was, you know, still enjoyed the whole thing.
Yeah, it's remarkably good. Dear readers, do not boo at a movie ever. Ever.
I mean,
please.
I don't know.
Who are you really?
Who are you booing? No one is going to hear it. No one involved with that movie knows.
If you want to express your excitement and you want to stand up and applaud at the end, cool, go for it.
Stumble drunkenly into a Zack Snyder movie, I might boo.
Oh. Okay.
But I guess my point is...
Okay, readers, if you stumble drunkenly into any place, with John Maltz.
Just call us a cab. Call us both a cab.
Call us a cab and then follow his lead.
I was just going to say, it's not like being at a play where it's like, oh, the people up on the stage.
Those people on the screen can't hear you. Just so you know, it's not how it works.
But definitely don't do it at a play.
Or like when a comic
is doing a set.
It's genuinely rude, and I agree. But at least, like, you know.
You're not bringing any good into the world. What are you doing? You're being a supervillain, not a superhero.
Oh. All right. You brought that around. I like it.
How that worked out?
I don't know. I'm unconvinced by this argument.
How about if you're not being, like, not super, but you're still being a villain?
I don't know. I think Moth just wants to boost.
I think you can be kind of a jerk. I think you can be a kind of a jerk without being a villain.
At the end of the day, I kind of like. I'm going to toast marshmallows as the world burns with Moth.
I'm more of a whisper snide comments to the person next to me, sort of.
Right. Yeah.
Well, do that. I, of course, am too. But
yeah, I mean that's but, why I mean, this whatever. Show works.
Here's the thing. I think it takes away from other people's enjoyment. People may feel like they had enjoyed it, but if everybody starts booing.
What you need to do, if you get upset about something, is get yourself a podcast.
Right. Yeah.
It's a long play, but it pays off in the end.
It's not really that long, but it's a little bit longer than booing at the theater.
Right. If you're a white guy, find two of your white guy friends, get yourself a podcast.
See, it's not that hard.
That's true.
No, it's not that hard. It's hard not to. That's how
right,
stupid.
Right. Keep getting sucked into these things.
Right. Oh, God, it's awful. Did I kill the conversation?
No, we could keep going, but I mean, there are a couple other things I could throw out there, but I don't know if you wanted to plumb the depths further of your whole superhero, supervillain.
For sure. Let's go for it. We've been recording for what, 30 minutes now? We've got another 20 to go?
Yeah, sure. Something like that.
Yeah. Let's rock and roll. You know what? I need to get a Star Trek joke in here somewhere. So I do. I honestly try every episode to drop some kind of Star Trek reference.
Wow.
Is Data a superhero?
Oh, I'm out. Damn. Ooh.
He's probably the closest one, right?
I mean, he's
maybe Geordi.
He's a robot, and there are robot superheroes, so
sure.
Valid.
He's strong as hell. It's First Contact when he jumps down and just takes a bunch of bullets.
Yep.
True. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is he kind of vision-like?
Is Geordi right? Exactly. Yeah, they treat him very vision-like. Is Geordi a superhero because he has vision?
I don't know.
And a particular set of skills.
Right.
Riker's
a superhero because he's just getting laid all over.
You know, one of the shows where I feel
a man
like
sitting in a chair.
Right. One of the shows that I feel like is not a superhero show, but is actually very close is Justified.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
Because his quick draw ability is just like, I mean, he's...
Anytime he gets
in a gunfight with anybody, he's going to win.
Okay, so that's an interesting choice, though. Because can you sort of come around on that and say, argue that like certain versions of sort of the Western genre are kind of like a pre-superhero.
Yeah, right.
I feel like there is an angle to that. Looking back at the class, Lone Ranger, right? Is the Lone Ranger a superhero?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Lone Ranger might qualify, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think we would say that...
He's also a comic book. I mean, you know,
right, he's a pulp character of that ilk. Yeah.
Right. I think we'd be pretty comfortable saying Zorro is a prototype superhero, right?
Sure. Well, yes. I mean, then we
got
get
a
back
mask.
Around.
He like messes up the rich guys, fights for justice.
Just to tie this
all
back
the
in.
The mask does not hurt.
To tie this all the way back in, Robin Hood, who is also very Zorro-like, but also except for maybe the Kevin Costner version. There's a superhero element to it, though, right? Like there's a superhero identity, right? Like there's a secret, quote unquote, secret identity, like, or at least a dual identity happening in most of the myths. There's also a like preternatural, like he's really great at shooting arrows. Right. And then there's also a moral component to the stealing from the rich to give to the poor kind of thing.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's a great set. Well, first of all, we covered Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves in the bonus feed. If you're not a member of the Incomparable Network,
you're missing out.
Go sign up now. You're honestly, I swear to God, that's probably the best episode we've done. I feel It's pretty good. Yeah, I feel good about it. Because we could crack a bunch of Arrow jokes, and it's a terrible movie, so we had a bunch of fun. Yeah. It was like a third-rate Flophouse episode, which is pretty good. You know, it's nothing to snark about. But yeah, I think you laid out three of the tenets of being a superhero, right? Which is some kind of preternatural is the way you put it. Is that how you pronounce that?
It's
close enough.
I'm going to go with that. You know, I could type it wrong, but you know what I mean. Preternatural ability to do something, whether it be throw a boomerang within, get out of chains, like be Batman, basically, or shoot
arrows.
There
needs to be a good Captain Boomerang. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The boomerang, I think, has gotten short shrift.
Yeah.
As a superhero weapon.
That's fair point.
Yeah. We need a guy called Kango, and he just. Sure. Around murdering people. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, I think, is a moral compass that is pointed in a direction so strongly that it becomes iconic and kind of dumb and exaggerated to a level that is obscene and kind of stupid, right? Batman's got it. Superman has it. Spidey has it. The sense of responsibility kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Superman is just like... He doesn't have an arrow so much as like he's just radiating. I'm going to try to be a good guy in every way I possibly can be. And I think that exaggerated sense of responsibility is what makes a hero. Am I talking out of my ass there? Like, I feel like I'm.
No.
The hero part.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then the super part is having. I mean. There's still something else about superhero, though.
Right.
Because superhero is a very comic book... It's very associated with comic books.
Right.
So, like you know, because most of the... Well, Jedi are weird, but... Like I said, they fail so dramatically.
Right, but if you take...
It's almost like that moral compass is just not... It's like... It's around too many magnets.
Well, and there's crossover with with Robin Hood and stuff, you get into legend and myth, right? And there are a lot of mythological characters who behave in super heroic ways, right? Like if you go back and look at like Gilgamesh
Robin Hood would have been a comic book if he had been, if he had been invented in the 30s or 40s.
But I was going to throw out something like King Arthur, right? Like King Arthur, another character where there's a moral compass, there's a bunch of, I mean, it also has like the structure of the stories is almost superheroic, right? Like there's lots of different stories about it, but it's canonized around like certain things that happen. Right. So like you know certain events, but like there's also magic powers and all that. So I don't know.
Yeah, Star Wars.
That's a really good question because I feel like King Arthur is really like on the fence. I'm completely on board with Robin Hood. And then you have the like a lot of the gods are actually in the comic books.
The Greek gods, Norse gods.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think the trap here is superhero. There's no superhero. There is demigod, or there is a mythological creature that is closer to man than they are to a god, right? Hercules, comic book character, also person of myth.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, certainly so much gets repurposed by the comic books. Especially
like,
in the
20th, Samson, like they all take century. Right. They take a lot of it. And I think if you see Star Wars as anything other than like a modern myth, I think you're kind of missing the point. I don't think that Lucas intended that, but everybody knows I'm your father. Everybody knows all of that. Like that is.
Well, and I think you
that is part of it. Like we've become entrenched in that, right?
There's a similar strong argument about superheroes, right? Like, I think I saw our friend Lisa Schmeiser comment to this at one point about like superheroes as sort of modern mythology. And I thought, it's a really great point because it's the same way that we trade stories about them. There's all these different stories about them. Sometimes they conflict. Sometimes right. there are things that stand out. But the level of cultural awareness, right? Like, it's amazing to me that you can go anywhere now. And like, I mean, I was just watching, my wife was watching a British show that I like, and she's gone back to the first season. It's called Line of Duty. It's a cop show. Yeah. Not a big deal, but there's a scene where a cop is interrogating this kid, and, you know, it starts talking about DVDs, and the kid's like, oh, yeah, it was Iron Man 2. And you're like, yeah, it's just cultural, like, it's so embedded in the culture. Like, 20 years right. ago, you'd be like, oh, that's like Iron Man. And people would be like, who? But today, literally everybody knows who Iron Man is. Literally everybody, right? Like, right, even if you try to avoid it, even if you try to not watch any of these movies, you can't escape knowing who Iron Man is.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So two things. Oh, she's your wife now. That's great. I don't know how you pulled it off, but you know.
You were there.
Good job. I know. I don't know how he heisted her heart because, you know.
Heart heist. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, I 100% think that all of these things are modern myth, and we are on this show, you know, celebrating and taking it with, you know, some kind of tongue in cheek and a little bit of self-awareness of that. I think that's okay. I think myths exist for a reason. I think that these stories of heroes exist to, I don't know, make us feel better about the how either mundane life is or to help fight the unfairness that you see in the world. There's something to them that is undeniably has existed throughout human history in whatever form it is. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a comic book or a TV show. There is something to this notion of myth. Even myths that contradict each other. Like, there's like 8 versions of Spider-Man out there. Nobody cares.
Right,
it's
but
fine.
But the fundamental, like, atomic level of it is what's important.
Yes.
And you know, not to delve too much into, like, you know, Joseph Campbell, but, like, certainly there is, these patterns do get repeated in a lot of stories, especially, you know, Campbell was focusing, obviously, on Western mythology, largely. But there is, certainly, like you said, everybody has those heroic stories, and I think it's in large part because, A, like you said, there's something comforting about it. But B, I think it's because there's an aspirational aspect to it, or a moralizing aspect in the sense, not necessarily of just morals, but like more of like an Aesop fable type moral, right? Like where there's a pattern of behavior. This is how really good people should act or something, right? Like we can argue about whether or not that's true, but that's certainly what the pattern is there for.
Right. It's literally a comic abstraction on top of behavior. Right. Like, if we had to assign demigod status to people or to characters, Spidey would be what? God of responsibility?
Hmm. Yeah, or spiders.
No, spiders too boring. That's come on. Spiders don't have like a whatever.
The responsible
you
spider.
You forget it. No, you got a D minus. It's fine. Spider of responsibility. Nah, forget it.
Well, I mean, it's interesting too. I mean, you know, I certainly in my head for some reason when you said that, my first thought was Mercury and / Hermes.
Right.
And I feel like there's an.
This is where I was going with that. Right.
Yeah, I feel like there's a synergy between those characters, but not for any reason that I can quite put my finger on other than this sort of like they are fleet of foot and there's a certain amount of like. Not snarkiness or comicness to those characters. I always think of Hermes as sort of like he's literally mercurial.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Good, our language is hilarious.
Next,
no,
ask me
but we
who
don't.
Thor
we don't need to
of.
Map. We don't need to map it onto an existent next.
Right, but there's a template or a some sort of pattern, and certainly that's similar also for a lot of the pantheons, right? Like. You have gods who are established because they represent something that's common, like thunder gods, for example, right? Like everybody had lightning storms and had to figure out how do we explain what the deal with a lightning storm is. So people come
and
up
it's
with their
explanation. Thor being a jackass, basically.
Right. Or Zeus or any of your lightning gods.
Or Zeus. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. 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 I mean, you can't conflate or you can't Greece and Rome, forget it, equivalent. Like, that. Don't worry about that. The Romans just stole it all. So put that aside. But the fact that the Norse gods had their own sort of mythology that sort of maps to the basics is interesting. Same all over. But I don't mean that Spider-Man should map to Mercury. It's... There are new, more modern takes on the on what virtues deserve avatars to serve them, right?
Sure.
Like, I think Batman is vengeance, Superman is maybe justice.
Sure, okay, I can see where you're going with that.
You know what I mean? Like, picture yourself 1,000 years from now digging up all of these comics and all of these movies and trying to watch them from a distance and being like, I am so sick of Peter Parker's parents getting killed or like whatever. Uncle Ben has died so many times and Bruce's parents have died all of this time. And it always does something slightly different. I don't understand what's going on. But ultimately, Batman feels like a creature of vengeance, right?
Yeah,
justified vengeance within carefully considered boundaries.
Okay, but he doesn't kill anybody. I mean, he vengeance to me is more like eye for an eye.
Sure.
Whereas he does seek justice.
Would you call him justice though over Superman? Superman seems like a justice kind.
Well, I mean, if we can only pick one for each, then I guess maybe not. But
I don't even think. You know what? I understand where you go with Superman and justice, but I don't actually. I put Superman much more on the side of sort of, I think moral right even is a strong, it's something stronger than justice, right? Because I don't know, it seems like it's something that's baked in, that's not just like, you know, people make rules and people are fallible.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, he's have a hard time quantifying it, but yeah.
Right. Truth, justice, and the American way. And by the American way, I mean the...
fictional
I know you're all expecting me to rant. I'm not gonna rant
here,
but
we go.
No, for crying out loud. No, I mean I mean the you know, the apple pie, the notion of what it should be, right? And I think that if of anybody, there's Superman that deals with that and he is the avatar of that ideal. Captain America, probably similar, you know?
Sure.
Like the notion of these people, the way that they're written to act is towards this greater and greatest ideal that I think you can have. Is it justice? I don't know. It's something idealized
because it is right. If you look at something like Civil War and you look at Cap's behavior in that, it's clearly there is a moral right that is not something that can be necessarily written down by people and agreed upon in some sort of legal framework, right? Like there is something higher than that, and that is what I adhere to.
Right, yeah. Cap will just tear down the government if he needs to. It's like, no, this is BS. I'm not dealing with that.
I love that scene though where he's almost okay with it. Like he's like if there are you know, things in place that we could, you know, and then all of a sudden he realizes that Tony's just
Tony's
still being Tony,
jackass.
And he's locked up Wanda. And it's like, nope, here we go. It's time.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's something...
I love Cap. Cap was not. I didn't give a hell about Cap before Chris Evans took him on. And I was a big Iron Man fan. I'm a nerd. I like the idea of building my own suit of armor and doing justice to the world. Thank God I'm not capable of that because
I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times, stop building robots that keep causing problems and trying to take over the world, okay?
Right. I'm way more likely to be Zola on like 1970s era cassette tapes than anything else, but... I mean, if I could, I'd love to be Tony. That's awesome. Man, Chris Evans' Cap is just the best. I have.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and I was not a believer.
Yeah.
I was not. When they announced that casting, I was like, oh, God, really? That guy from Fantastic Four? And then the minute I saw the first trailer when he was Skinny Steve, I was like, I was in.
Yeah.
I don't know if you got, I think I forgot to point this out to you guys at the wedding, but my all of my groomsmen and I were wearing superhero socks.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I'll dig up a picture when I actually have photos, but like each of us, I bought socks for all of my groomsmen that had like the superhero I associated with them. So, you know, I had
Thor, that's awesome. Yeah.
And Thor and Iron Man, and Tony was obviously Batman. So, you know, mixed our universes a little bit.
I'm pretty sure I noticed Batman on Tony's socks. Tony Sindelar, the dean of Batman U. For the readers out there,
yes, and
I thought that was just him. Like, I didn't ask him about it. I'm like,
I ordered those for everybody, but my socks were Cap. So,
that's probably what I would have gone with.
I find hard, you know, like I have. So my friend Evan, who's one of my groomsmen, we have long given him a hard time about being a jackass. He's very smart, and so we pointed. I obviously gave him Iron Man socks. Look, you're very smart. You're often the smartest person in the room, but you're sometimes a jerk.
Yeah, I should have been the Hulk.
Yeah, I
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I, you know, kind of nice most of the time.
You know,
every now and then, just.
Yeah, I think that's why didn't go with Ollie socks for that particular occasion. I skipped out.
You can't look
one.
At the Ollie socks the
it's
same
hard.
Way, can
it's
you?
Hard. Yeah. I want to bring us this. You know, actually, I want to say this has been actually a really interesting conversation. I'm amazed that we got this much time out of it. But I thought it was really interesting. I want to bring us around for a couple other short things. First of all, I want to bring us back around to the Kate Bishop casting news because we talked about it very briefly at the top. I actually think as I was thinking about this more, I was like, this may be the Disney Plus series I am the most interested in.
Than The Mandalorian?
No, the MCU. MCU Disney Plus series.
Okay. Okay.
Sam and Bucky is like a close second for me. But I've never been a huge Loki fan, and the Wanda Vision thing, which while it sounds interesting, is like one of those like I have no idea what that is, and it could be bananas. But
I like Paul Bettany a lot. I'm glad he's got work.
Basically
as far as that goes,
just fine. For me, I love the Matt Fraction Hawkeye run, and it seems like that's something that they're drawing some inspiration from. So I'm really intrigued to see where that goes, because I really like Kate Bishop, and it's telling to me that if you're going to cast Haley Steinfeld in that role. It feels like that's not a person you cast for a 6-episode miniseries, right?
No.
That is a high caliber, you know, actor who is somebody who you're going to bring back because this person is going to be in a movie eventually.
It'd be pretty funny if Hawkeye was divorced when the show began.
No. Well, okay. Yes. Yes. Because I've had a crush on the actress that he married for a long time, Linda Carlini.
I thought you had a crush on Jeremy Renner, which is fine.
He's cool too. But I mean,
he was his number one fan on Jeremy Renner's app.
I did. I spent over $1,000 on gold for JeremyRenner.app. I did. Mostly because I just wanted to meet Linda Cardellini. It turns out they're not married in real life, and I spent a lot of money on nothing.
Disappointing. Well, we're not, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in where that goes. That one seems like it's probably further out than most of the other shows, because I guess you need to do casting as opposed to just like, well, we've already got all these characters. They're already cast.
What I want to know is, have they cast Pizza Dog yet? That's all.
That is an important question.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get Lucky the Pizza Dog, and I gotta say, if you're pulling from the Fraction run, like, there's a lot of great stuff in there. It is the thing that got me back into comics, honestly. Like,
yeah, it's so good.
Bro.
And I'll just
Hawkeye.
I will also throw out another piece of casting news I saw, which is tangential to this, but I saw that there is a they cast in the upcoming, there are two more Mission Impossible movies coming. And Christopher McQuarrie announced on Instagram, I missed this when it first came out, but I think it was a few days ago now, that Hayley Atwell is going to be in the next one.
Oh.
And I was like, well, I was already sold, but now I'm extra sold.
Yeah.
Oh man, I would watch Hayley Atwell read the phone book.
I absolutely adore her, and so yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. I hope they give her a good meaty role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Also, Tom Cruise, you know, weirdness aside, man, that guy is a hardworking guy. Holy cow. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Like,
right. I don't know. I don't really approve of him, but he's a hard worker. I'm crazy as a loon.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But
he's strapping himself to that plane. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I know. I have so much admiration for that guy. He is amazing. Like, he commits himself.
Yes.
Wow, it's crazy. Right. Yeah. And he doesn't seem to do anybody much harm. Maybe he does. I don't know. I mean,
certain people he did.
Sure. Well, yeah. Did he? I don't know. The recruiting stuff seems not great.
Yeah,
me.
I think.
But I will say,
I'm saying
when you have your wife kidnapped, it's gonna.
Oh no! Wait, worse than when we took Belanti.
Let's just step away.
We had good reasons for that for a moment,
but
we had good reasons for that. Okay, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
I do want to say.
I'm retracting that. From the parts that I know, then most of them I don't want to know, and I will probably find out immediately after this recording.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah. Wow.
Just like
hardworking guy. I can't believe it. Like that. Like the stunt work alone is next level, and he's. What, 86?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, so I was going to say this. I don't know if you guys, did either of you guys watch Veronica Mars? John, you did, too. I know.
I have not seen season four yet.
I will just say.
I've seen the first episode.
Looking at Enrico Colantoni in the new one, who plays the dad, and he makes a point at one that he's like, he's 56. I'm like, first of all, holy crap, he's only 56. And then I looked it up and realized he's a year younger than Tom Cruise. And I was like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
Really? God, Tom Cruise
he's
is that old?
He's a year younger than Tom Cruise.
Yeah, Tom Cruise is an old guy. Like,
yeah, God, he's older than me.
He's going to be almost 60 by the time the last Mission Impossible, or last, I don't know, they've said they're making two more. He'll be 60 by the time the second one comes out.
Yeah, and he's going to be jumping out of a helicopter, grabbing the blades of another helicopter, and then jumping in the window and kicking the guy out. And it's going to be filmed live. That's how insane this guy is.
I'm not even crazy. And I can't do that.
Oh yeah. I can't believe you're 40.
I'm not 40. I've got like 7 months to go, and I got a lot of work I need to do, guys. I got a lot of work I need to do.
You should check into that.
You haven't heard it yet because I'm lazy and I haven't edited it yet. But when you weren't here, when James was, we just turned on John and just
like
raptors at Jurassic Park.
I thought about that a couple of days later.
I'm so sorry, John. No,
I'm looking at myself in the bathroom mirror.
Oh no. Oh, I'm so sorry. Normally it's me and John versus like the young critter Dan.
Ah, oh, poor Jan.
Yeah. Right.
The guy from Airwolf?
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh wait. We haven't talked enough about Airwolf.
Nope. All right. Moving on.
Or at all.
All right. Do you guys have anything you want to dump in here before I jump to? We do have a couple letters that I want us to answer.
I'd like if you could cut in about 30 seconds of the theme song to Airwolf. That'd be good.
I'll see what I can do. Didn't you have a sponsor? Do we have a sponsor today, Guy?
Yeah, it's Airwolf.
Show's not even on anymore.
Man, that was amazing.
I know.
What a coincidence that is.
Well, here's the thing. Time traveling dad just popped out of a bubble and he's like, hey, you know what? I've got a sponsorship from Knight Rider or Airwolf, and I picked Airwolf.
What? You didn't pick Knight Rider?
The less well known robot enabled machine from the 1980s.
Right. You did you picked the right one.
I don't know. David Hasselhoff's lawyer is gonna have a word.
Yeah.
We're huge in Germany, guys. Come on, read the road.
Right. Anyway, Airwolf.
We're gonna answer. We're gonna be right back, and we will answer some letters. All right. Our first letter is on Twitter from David Snyder, and he asks: this is relevant to our earlier conversation. If Marvel does cast Hayley Steinfeld as Kate Bishop, should Sony also cast her as a live-action Spider Gwen, or should they let someone else play a superhero? I feel like there will be some pissed off lawyers somewhere in that equation.
Yeah.
Cast a young black woman as Spider-Gwen.
Cast, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really matter to me, but I would feel like, and there are people doing double duty as superheroes these days. Or who did they just cast that was in a totally? Gemma Chan, who was in Captain Marvel, is also in the Eternals. Fine. Right. Yeah. All right. Whatever.
Yeah. Who cares? I don't know. Pick somebody new.
Yeah.
Pick somebody new from a group that you're not always picking from, and just go with it. It'll be fine.
Yeah. I'm not
people
even convinced
will be jerks
going
and they'll
to be
complain,
a,
but forget them.
I'm not even convinced that Sony's going to do a live action Spider-Gwen immediately, but. Right. I think it's probably a little ways down the road, frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
But she,
which is not to say that she wouldn't be great.
Yeah.
Just there's jobs to go around. Pick interesting people. Make good stuff. Yeah.
Tom Cruise, for example,
he'd make a great Spider-Gwen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, it's got to be Scarlett Johansson. She can play anything. She can from a rock to a tree to an Asian woman. Anything she wants.
Sure, yeah, she can just do it.
Right. Transgender person. She's got it. She's got it covered.
Yeah. Moving along. our second letter comes from at, I think I'm pronouncing it right, Flash, FLASSHE, who asks, what are your all-time favorite comics? Can be a single issue, graphic novel, arc, run, whatever. For bonus or alternate favorite comic-related TV show, season, or movie. Let's take the first one first. All-time favorite comics. Single issue, graphic novel, run, whatever. I just picked Hawkeye earlier in the previous segment, and I would say Matt Fraction's
that's
Hawkeye.
That's really good.
I mean,
as much as I don't like Miller anymore, and realize that the Dark Knight is very problematic, it's still one of my favorites of all time, and probably my favorite of all time.
I was trying to think if there's another of that ilk where it's like, I mean, I read Watchmen. I don't have the love for it that a lot of other people do, just because I feel
I don't
like
either. Yeah. Yeah. I don't either. I mean, I thought it was good, but it's not like, but I love V for Vendetta, and I love, The Killing Joke too.
Yeah. Which we did talk about and
also
we were
problematic.
Both sad about. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But still love in a way. Yeah.
There was a run of I'm just going to throw this out because it's one of the things that one of the ones that I like. It was like a 4-issue miniseries back in the early 80s, like before most of this stuff blew up. But I probably when Moore was doing Swamp Thing. And it was The Gargoyle, and I don't even remember who did it. They never became famous.
Oh, yeah.
Or like super famous, but it was the Marvel's version of the Gargoyle, and it was just like a 4-issue run, but just like drawn very well, and just like a tale, just like just about him. And he had been in like the Defenders, I think.
Yep,
if I remember correctly.
Was.
Yeah,
he was the Defenders guy.
But not a big character, but treated very well in that series. And you know, if you can find it, I think it's worth reading.
I never read that, but I started working.
I don't think it's in
Unlimited. Yeah.
Unlimited.
Yeah. I was told to read that, I don't know, a couple of years later when I was working at the comic store.
Okay.
And I just never did. But yeah, like I was told.
You're the only person I've ever talked to who knew.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. And Jay Torres, you know, my spirit guide, told me to read it, and I whatever just not never got around to it. Putting aside all of the Watchmen, Killing Joke, like Year One, it just if it's being wrapped up in a trade paperback and made a thing, let's just set those aside as accepted that they're great and you know, obviously have some caveats about a lot of them, but that's canon. That feels like the that feels like the one-on-one reading, more or less, for comic books. There was a run of Iron Man starting around issue 200, I believe, that was the Armor Wars, where Tony started to find out that his technology had been used by a whole bunch of supervillains. Like, it had basically been stolen. His IP had been stolen, and it had been used by a whole bunch of supervillains. They touch on it a little bit in the movies and in Iron Man 2, but they don't really get into it. And he just goes on a rampage. He is just, he builds these little things that are going to fuse out the tech. And he just starts taking everybody out, from bad guys, big and small, like the Beetle, who's like a Spider-Man villain, to, I don't know, the Mandroids, who are like...
So when was this?
88, 87?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Does he fight Stain in that one?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so is the Silver Centurion armor in that one?
I think it might be. He ends up fighting a giant robot or a guy. I mean, guess what? It's a dude. I forget. Oh, man, I'm going to forget the name. But it's very similar to the Ironmonger suit. It may just actually be Ironmonger. But the guy's got basically a nuke on his back. And he's fielded by the U.S. government, who's using Tony's tech to make it work. And it's not the, in the movies, it makes a lot more sense. Like the power source, what do they call it? What do they call a power source in the movies?
Arc reactor.
The arc reactor. Yeah. It's not that. It's like some circuitry.
Yeah.
And he's just going around nuking everybody. And in one of them, he just goes after the Mandroids, which are shield robots, basically, or dudes in power armor that are, guarding a shield facility. And, Cap at the time, Steve Rogers, not as Captain America, because during that run, he'd been replaced. But he basically fights Tony, and he's like, "Look, I'm going to try to save these guys." And Tony's like, "Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to take them out."
Yeah,
which is like a conflict that actually really makes sense, and it's really heartfelt because it's great. Like, it makes a lot of sense. That run was terrific because it got back to me, at least, for why Tony Stark did what he did in the first place, which was like, my munitions have been hurting people, and I'll be damned if I let them do it again, ever.
Yeah.
And if that means I'm going to beat up Steve, I'm going to do it. And that made sense to me. So I liked that run a lot.
Right.
I liked the run of Kraven the Hunter in Spider-Man, mostly because I think that was one of the few dark comics I got into early. I believe the Iran-Contra hearings were going on at the time, because I remember picking one up from a newsstand and looking up at the TV and watching Ollie North or Reagan say that he, you know, what was this thing? I do not recall. No, it's not even that.
Well, I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. There was something he just kept saying.
That's pretty good, Dan.
Thank you. Recollection. That's all I can say. Yeah, but so the Kraven the Hunter run of Spidey was great. He was wearing the black suit with the white logo, like basically the Venom suit. But it wasn't Venom at the time. It was just a regular suit. I loved it. I thought it was great. Because he died. And that...
Spoiler alert.
Well, no, that happens in the first issue. Like, he's just off his game, and Kraven manages to tag him, and he's like, how did the B-rate villain manage to get me? And it's like, I was just off my game that day. And I, it's like, wow.
It happens.
Yeah, that's rough.
I will say, I think we've mainly limited to superhero comics, but, you know, if we weren't, then I would certainly add, like, Sandman into that mix. But that seems like kind of a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah. So, wait, yeah. Sandman is definitely on my list of stuff that, like, don't even talk about it. Put it up there. The Hulk, the Grey Hulk, around issue 300.
Oh, that was pretty good, too, yeah.
That was great. Really great. He basically only turns into the Hulk at night, and he's going after gamma bombs that the government's making. And both him and Banner are aligned. Like, they both want the same thing, and they're, like, living out of crappy hotels, motels. Mm-hmm.
The way we love the Hulk, really.
Right, exactly.
Living
in a crappy hotel, he's bouncing around the desert, he's gray and he's underpowered. He ends up fighting Wolverine at some point, and he gets the crap cut out of him. And it's drawn by Todd McFarlane, no less. Like, the whole run is great. It's really, really great. Peter David and Todd McFarlane. Great, great run. I think that's three, and I think that's enough. There's many, many more.
We could go on forever, but we
could go on. Yeah, I mean, we should do a whole show. We could do a whole show.
We should probably do an exchange where we just, like, here's like three. We'll each pick a run, and everybody reads it, and we'll talk about it. But
Okay.
We'll talk about that. We'll discuss it. Okay. But we have gone on for a while today, so I think we should wrap it up here unless you guys have any last pressing business.
No, I really thought we'd need a lot of filler here, but it turns out
we can talk for easily for
an
hour.
We never need filler.
Yeah.
Super easy. All right. Well, thank you guys all for tuning in. Readers, we love you. We appreciate your support, and thanks for sticking with the show. And even as we navigate this tricky time between our shows that we do recaps for, we hope you still enjoy listening. And please send us your letters. You can fax them over. You can hit us up at BiffCast on Twitter. You can hit us up at biff@theincomparable.com. Or, you know, you can find us and drop us a line. We are happy to talk about stuff on air. And if you've got other suggestions of things that we could devote a show to in this little hiatus that we have between TV shows, then, yeah, let us know. We're definitely all ears. But until we come back next week, I would like to thank the rest of my team. John Moltz, thank you for being here.
Dan, I just want everyone to know that I would not actually skin anybody.
As your lawyer, Guy English, always a pleasure.
I've seen him do it. Also,
one time
I stood there and watched him do it. Yeah,
you're no better.
We'd have a little bit.
You
to drink.
Skin a guy once, and then you get and then you're.
We'd
skin...
have a little bit to drink. We did a shot of vodka. Also, dear readers, please write in and tell Dan how much you appreciate him, because there are two episodes in the can, one of which I've edited, the other one I haven't. The reason that you get these faxes printed out is entirely because Dan is competent and good at what he does. In the shows that you haven't heard yet, but you will one day, I think John and I make fun of him. And...
It's fair.
Yeah, but he wasn't here.
He wasn't here, and I'm increasingly feeling bad about
I think we're justified.
That was my goal. My goal was just making you feel worse about it.
Yeah. Anyway, write in and give him your love, because God knows I'm not going to.
All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in, and we will be back next week. But until then, I don't have a way of ending this show, but apparently you guys do.
Oh, yeah.
We don't need to go with this.
Really bugs me that you won't just get on board with this.
You know what? That's what I'm designed to do, is just make you... I'm long-suffering. That's my
bit. You know what you need to do? What? You need to take a puff and call it a night.
You just got to take a puff and call it a night, man.
I'm going.